Never too young to learn, never too young to dream, never too young to build, never too young to chase a dream. You, my friend, are never too young. Welcome to the podcast Never Too Young, where student entrepreneurs talk about their experiences or the aspiring ones to learn. Yajur and I are your hosts, and we welcome you to a new episode of NTYR. Today, we have Harshit Awasthi with us.
Harshit is a parent mate-year student at BITS Pilani, studying chemical engineering. His interest in immersive technology has helped him build his startup, Kalam Labs, which is world's first life science classes through interactive games. Welcome to the podcast, Harshit.
Hi, Yajur and Sabagya. Thanks for calling me on the podcast.
All right, Harshit, my first question to you is, at what time did you wake up today?
I slept at 9 a.m. in the morning and for 2 hours, and then I was getting ready for app testing from 1 to 12. So yeah, I sleep between the day, making between gaps.
Got it. You're typical entrepreneur you are, huh?
Yeah, most of us, we have to manage it out. Like, sleep is something which you have to do it to work threshold. So that's why jahan jagah mile, you just fit in this hour and then it works for me. It might not work for most of the people, but it does work for me and can work for many others.
Great. So Harshit, you know, you're from BITS Pilani, which is a very great educational institute, but you also hail from Kanpur, which is home to one of the OG IITs. So did you or did you not have the IIT dream?
I had an Oxford dream, to be specific. I wanted to be a research scholar at Oxford University and to study science over there. Was something which I always fascinated. I was always fascinated with the videos, YouTube and all. I used to watch them. I had been to IIT for competitions because it was in my city only. So I had been there a lot of times. So definitely it was not a dream for me because it was in my own city. So I do not want to have my college in my own city.
Right, understood. And you know, BITS is an institution in itself. I mean, I know for a fact that many people do not prefer IITs or many universities abroad to go to BITS because there's a very, very good culture. So for example, there's a zero attendance policy in BITS, right? And the attendance policy in all the other colleges are actually making students suffer. So being an insider, tell us something more about BITS as an institution.
BITS is an institution for all the people, I think, who don't know exactly what they have to do in life because it just it gives you the maximum exposure, which I think a North Indian university could ever give. Okay. So if I compare with all the technical institutes or even the arts institutes in Delhi or other aspects of it, so you get like all the spectrum of the thing. So you can identify what you want to do in life and then you can do it. The basic difference which comes special to the BITS is definitely that attendance policy. I did not attend the classes this semester, hardly any class, and I'm still enrolled in BITS. So you can imagine the scenario, and that is the flexibility which they offer.
Yeah, I mean, flexibility is one thing, and also I think a peer group is one thing which also BITS offers you. You have a lot of great minds which are together on one campus. I mean, if you look at the alumni structure of BITS, it's pretty great. I think it's better than, or it's comparable to a lot of IITs even. So, and also I guess a private institution with that of a legacy like BITS, that's a great combination, because IITs although are great institutions, but because there's a sense of, you know, ki ye government institutions hain, toh ek wo lethargicness attached hai unke saath aur unke administration ke saath, jo I expect ki BITS mein nahi hoga.
That is something which I also thought, but when I worked at certain institutes or when we went to YC Bangalore or IIT Kanpur for any other purpose, that was something which was missing. So I think government institutions, at least of the top engineering branches and other things, they don't have that lethargicness. They are basically very much comparable to a good private institution who is actually free from much of the administration blockage. So IIT Kanpur and IIT Bombay, if you look at how they manage the COVID crisis in the 1 year back when there were a lot of universities, they were not knowing what to do, what not to do. I think only two institutions, and in my knowledge, they actually gave a solution which was acceptable to the students and the professors, and those were IIT Kanpur and IIT Bombay. So they are a bit ahead in those aspects, I think.
Acha, in terms of administration and all of that?
Yes, yeah, they are quite active.
Got it. And what about the fee structure? Do you have anything to comment upon that?
Fees is something which if you live in a capitalist world, so money doesn't matter in the present, it's always the projections, right? So if we look please at that aspect, if you are going to BITS or IIT or IIMs or NLUs, so obviously if you can have a better fees because it gives a better leverage to the whole system, that if you take a loan and then study and then pay it off, that's a good plan ahead. It's not a bad plan. So I do not think fees is much of a problem, but definitely many people have problems in availing the loans, and these are the aspects which is quite tricky. So we should give more opportunities on that side.
Plus, I think the kind of education BITS offers, it's a great return on investment nevertheless.
Yeah, it's definitely.
So while talking about what all BITS offer, I think another thing which BITS offer is self-learning, right? Because so the concept of self-learning, whenever I'm reading something or researching something, I think that comes on its own. So while you said you did not attend the classes, but you must have had to appear for the exams. So I think the self-learning, there's a lot of scope of self-learning which one learns while being in BITS.
Yeah, there is a lot of scope of self-learning, but not specific to the courses. I am basically a chemical engineering and a chemistry dual degree student over there, right? I should not say it out, but I do not have good knowledge about the chemical topics. I just do it in order to pass the things. And definitely there are certain gray methods used, which every student is using nowadays. But what the thing is that you have a lot of freedom with the time, right? So that aspect of self-learning is actually something which is up to you. You can actually self-learn CSGO also, and you can also learn some new thing which you think can be fruitful.
Yeah, obviously, as in self-learning, not only in the subject which you are pursuing, but also applies to the other fields you're interested in.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell us that while reading about you, we read that you have been into research internships as well. So did that self-learning aspect come from researching or vice versa?
That aspect came from not joining any coaching institute. So my parents were really good at this thing, that they never pressurized me for anything. So I used to sit in my room like in 11th and 12th and just read the books and that's it. So I did not have any formal coaching. I just I was just enrolled in the All India Test Series, which was conducted by some private institutions. So that's it. So that aspect of reading the books and then understanding themselves out of science, that actually was something which was inherently present, not because of the things which were there at BITS, but I think to study and make reason out of on its own, that is something which was me.
Also, you know, as you mentioned, that you started out as a researcher, you had a lot of interest in research, and we had a conversation prior to this, and what we know about you is that you were heavily involved with research organizations in India and abroad. Also, for a fact, we know that you were into some really cool and interesting stuff. So please, for the listeners, tell us something about your research life.
Okay, so my research life actually was only for 1 year, when I was a full-time serious researcher, and that was just the first year and the second, like starting of the second year of the college. I'm fascinated by space and stars, so I think every kid must have looked up in the sky and looked at these tiny little objects. So that was my fascination as well. And in that field, I was even beyond I went a bit ahead and started looking up for the alien life proofs. So the field of astrobiology is actually the true science of understanding alien life. So many people think that aliens will actually come through an UFO, or maybe a green-headed person with a big eye will just wave off and do magical things in their life, which I think is not the truer picture of science. There are astrobiological units which in NASA, in ISRO, and in each and every institution, I think throughout the world, which actually look for these proofs, and they are looking for the bacteria and the protozoa. So I was interested since a very early age. Like when I was in class 11th, I got in touch with a research scholar, Mr. Graham Lau, who is actually now a director at Blue Marble Space, which is basically a associate body of NASA in astrobiology unit. So I got in touch on Instagram, and we chatted a lot. So I also worked, I closely know his PhD degrees and how he managed it out well. And he helped me to actually do something fruitful. So I had worked on the topic of Enceladus in Saturn. When you're looking for life, the first thing comes is water. So I was looking for the places where water could be found. And then slowly and gradually, I got into more details and details of how we can find any alien bacteria in some planet, maybe in the solar system of the Earth.
So right from finding alien bacteria into some other planet and finding water in maybe Saturn, how did you shift from research to entrepreneurship? As in, how did that shift from the last seat to the front seat happen?
That is a bit different because my routine was not like most of the first year students. I was not that much extrovert in talking to a lot of and joining a lot of clubs and all. But I was part of dramatics and certain creative artworks as well. So I am also a good voice artist, like in the college. So I was performing a lot of plays and all with voice art as a thing. So there was a startup which was running in my campus. So they needed someone on the mass media thing to work upon. So this is actually a good point of Vitz Pilani, that once you enter the college, you will start seeing a lot of startups popping up in your own batch and your senior batch, and some startups which are excelling in third and fourth year only. So that is something which was happening over there. So I worked with a startup to work out on their YouTube channel and to create a simple video like Minute Physics. And with that, it actually had ascended to another startup. And then I founded my own startup in third year beginning. And then the journey began with all the things. It was actually not third year, it was second year only. Like before third year itself, we had founded it off.
Right. Also, one interesting thing about you is that apart from being into astrobiology, you're also into immersive technology. So you're an immersive technology enthusiast, to be specific. So tell us something more about your interest in immersive technology. What exactly is immersive technology? And also, how did you come up with the idea of commercializing immersive technology?
Yeah. So like if I tell what do I mean by immersive technology, so any kind of interaction, it might not be just head lenses and headgears and everything. It's just your simple mobile phone. That's an immersive device, right? So the degree of immersiveness is something which we have to work upon. And that is something which I think is the next evolution of technology, which is coming nowadays. We have worked a lot on flat screen phones, to be honest. Like each and every company is launching slimmer and smarter phones. And people do not know what to do with it. They are not going to launch an Apollo rocket with their phones. And they have to just do simple things, right? So with each and every step ahead, we can see a saturation in the whole tech industry and the IT industry. So in that aspect, the shift from mobile screens to your lenses, which are present in front of your eyes, or maybe the earphones which you plug in, they together can work on a model which is similar to the Doraemon dream which we have seen in our childhood. You can see something with a lens, Google lens, and all these things. So they have started coming in, but they are in a very nascent stage. So looking at this thing, when we interacted with a lot of startups and a lot of things, so AR and VR was a technology which fascinated me in the beginning, like augmented reality and virtual reality. So I was keen into applying that technology into education, because I seriously think education needs to be looked at with more perspective of a child's mind rather than from a teacher's mind. So in that aspect, we worked with NCRT, we developed an augmented reality application. But yet again, the problem was that the industry is not yet ready for AR and VR adoption. So our products, which we worked with government, they went well. Like they were like the app which we worked with NCRT, that was known as ePathshala AR. So there were 10,000, 15,000 downloads. But there's not an aura in the whole country regarding augmented reality and virtual reality. The only time when we actually scan something is only for its UPI QR code, right? So in that aspect, if you look at the thing that the last time when the whole country was using augmented reality was Pokemon Go. Okay, now you can feel the sensation, like that was just a tinge of a technology which was coming in. And Pokemon Go was a huge sensation in 2016-17. So you can feel the impact which it caused, which will it cause when it will come. But actually these technologies are control is not exactly the good word, but I could say regulated by the five companies, Google, Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook. And these companies only work that what technology should come first. So I think Apple will be the front runner in this league, and they are going to launch an eyeglass in, I think, a couple of years. And after that, there will be an advent of things. We started working on it beforehand, and that was the lost thing. Never work on an industry which is yet budding, and you don't have the platforms to, like, there are no tools to work around. So it's a very gray industry, AR and VR as of now. So we shifted the domain to actually gaming, because gaming is also an extension, like AR and VR are extensions of gaming worlds, actually, if you look through it. Even the code and how they are built together, there is mostly Unity or some Sumerian, or there are specific engines which can work for both of the things, like AR, VR technology and for the gaming industry. So we shifted our paradigm towards the gaming side and saw the live streaming thing. And there's a rise in live streamers and YouTube and YouTubers in India. So that is something which is also an insight for the new immersive revolution which is coming up. So we worked on a product of Kalamla's, which basically now has more insights than we had in 1 year or 2 years back.
I think I agree with you, because timing is very important, because I think Google, if I'm not wrong, Google released the specs of its own, Google Specs, if I'm taking the correct product name, back in 2013, 2014. And even though it was based on the same technology, it was a huge flop, right? So when do you think India will be ripe for the AR, VR technology?
There are two factors, 5G, which will be brought in by, I hopefully think, Jio or Airtel maybe, or some other service provider, but most probably Jio will be the one to provide 5G, because you need high latency, like low latency net bandwidth to operate with these things. Your phone cannot handle an AR computation, but once you will have 5G and other high-tech device like spectrums, then your phone doesn't need to process anything. Everything will just work on cloud computation. In that aspect, that will be the next breakthrough. So 5G is a barrier. And the second barrier is that any one of these companies has to actually decide to come in India with these devices. So it's a parallel thing. They know that there is no 5G as of now, so they are not launching it prematurely. And while all the internet service providers, they're working to bring in 5G. So after 5G, there can be a good merge, which I think should happen in the next 2 years or 3 years.
Hopefully it happens. But, you know, as you said, you know, you mentioned Pokemon Go, and Pokemon Go was actually a sensation in, I think when I was in 11th grade, it was a lot of people were doing, using Pokemon Go application, because yeah, it used to combine your Pokemon game interface with the actual reality. So it's, you know, I think immersive technology market wise is a lot of scope. A lot of people will get involved with it. What is the scope of its application? Like, you are using it in education. What do you think, where else can it be applied and used across sectors, across industries? What, according to you, is the scope of immersive technology?
Yeah. Like, Sarvage, if I just twist your question a bit, like you were saying, where it can be applied. So that is something which is actually one of the things which come in our, which comes in the mind of young entrepreneurs, that we have created something and now we have to apply it. That is the catch. If something is actually needed by the user and they actually want to use it, there is nothing which can stop it from being used, and there's nothing which can actually make them use if they actually don't find it useful. Okay. So in that aspect, if you might have, if you would just go back in history, like 5 or 6 years back only, like not that far in history. So there was a trend that people were thinking voice searches will be something like a new future. People will use voice notes and more voice mediums will be used to listen out well. Yeah, podcasts and everything, but they were already running on radios and they have been conventional mediums of entertainment and content. But people were thinking that instead of typing, people will just go to Google and ask these things. But the trends which we see now, that they're like actually searching by text pad is something yet very much common. I do not remember the last time when I used the voice thing to actually ask something in Google. Usually it falters and we do not use it more often than that. Okay. So that happens with AR as well. Once you have a glass on your face, which can actually show you everything what your phone was showing you before, you will never need your mobile phone. Your purpose will be solved. And once you have this screen and it's not hopefully damaging your eyes on your, like, just in front of you every time, and you can like switch back and forth so easily, then that will be something more useful to us. Why we are not using VR? Because the headsets are too much, like they're so claustrophobic, like you cannot wear it for more than an hour. And for AR glasses, there are hardly any true AR glass which is present out here. Like Jio is working on Jio Glass. There are companies who have been working. Facebook has been working extensively. They have created a lab known as Facebook Reality Labs, where they are specially working on virtual reality. The Oculus company, which you might have heard in the virtual reality domain, is actually owned by Facebook, and they are creating all these things. So there is a hardware breakthrough which is yet present in these immersive devices. Once it will be convenient for the users to use, they will use it. So all the applications, they will just come naturally.
Got it. So, but you know, honestly, as an outsider and as a non-technical person, when I see VR or when I think of VR or augmented reality, the first thing which comes to my mind is entertainment. My genuine query is that how exactly can it be applied? Like, I could have never thought of applying AR or VR or any sort of immersive technology in education, which is great. I mean, if you can manifest uska jo interest or uska regarding jo passion hai, because I'm pretty sure children are very fascinated with all of this, ki we are going to travel Jupiter and we're going to travel Saturn, which I think is the, you know, crux of Kalam Labs. That's how you're igniting interest in the field of science and solar space. So education is one very, you know, unconventional sort of application of AR and VR. Entertainment is the most conventional one.
Yeah.
Which other industries do you think hopefully will see AR in the next few years?
I think once it comes in, then it will change. So you have just five senses, right? Eyes, nose, and like, there's only five sense organs, right? So the only thing which AR will going to manipulate is going to be the visual part and the auditory part, okay? Taste and all, that's not going to happen very soon, okay? So that's the only thing which is going to change. So everything which you are doing with your mobile phone, which uses your eyes and ears, can be affected by augmented reality. So all the industries come into that. And I'll tell you the best use case. So that is my dream project or something, like the dream implementation of augmented reality or virtual reality or extended reality, whatever you want to call, is something related to what you might have seen in Harry Potter. Like there's a character, Professor Dumbledore, who's the headmaster of the whole magical university, right? So there's a magical tool which is known as Pensieve. Like you could immerse into that and go to a flashback memory. Now, if you have augmented reality headset and scanners all in your home, so you can actually record your any meeting with a person. Let's suppose if we are actually sitting in two different parts of the world, but somehow the room settings are tracked by the system. The system can track each and everything, like where Sarvak is standing, where I am standing, where Yajur is standing. And with all these aspects and the 3D model and a seamless AR device, it will as if like that we are sitting all together. And the best part is that we can also record these things spatially and also visit them back in time. So let's suppose after 20 years, you want to see how you were interacting with your younger brother. You can actually live that moment like in the movies, like a flashback. You can see yourself talking. You can see how your brother is talking. And that is something which can be the biggest breakthrough in the whole human interactions.
That will indeed be a very big breakthrough. I think even if this breakthrough takes years to come, I think this breakthrough has been preponed by at least 5 to 6 years due to the whole pandemic situation, right? Because due to the whole pandemic, we have moved to virtual settings, virtual conferences, and have been using technology very much. So I think the inclusion of AR and VR into our life has been actually been supported or been actually fueled by the pandemic.
I have a contrary point to that observation. I do listen that thing that Corona has helped us technologically, but I think that is not the case. Zoom and whatever devices which we are using now on the platforms, there have been a resistance in using them. So Corona was actually, you cannot work without it, and in that situation we are using it. So there has been a culture which you might have seen in the post of Kunal Shan, Naval Ravikant as well, that India has been a status-driven society a lot. For example, if you are rich, then you will be wearing a suit and a coat and you will have a car, you will go to Taj for business meetings and conferences, large mansions and all these things. So when I was in second year, I saw that thing so evidently that we had to actually travel from Pilani to Delhi to Bangalore to attend conferences, like run around investors, talk to the people, chase, go to railway stations, buses and all that. All that heck could have been solved if you could have just used Zoom. Okay, and Zoom has been present since all these years.
Yeah, I think it started in 2015.
And video conferencing is not a new thing. Like video conferencing has been since years. But that basic idea that if I go to a place and people should look at me, that is something was present in India. And because of that, there was a latency in adapting Zoom in India and in many parts of the world, which could have been adapted much earlier than that. if you could have like for and to just to add on to that, if you were using Zoom and other social media like other interacting virtual mediums much before than Corona, then even Corona would have been stopped much more in an earlier day of time, because we were not been we would not have been interacting this often, right? And look at the like the present life. If you're working in an MNC or in a private company, we don't have that sad image, because you're not going to 9-to-5 job. You don't have to catch a bus and go to a metro station and then hop onto our office with a cubicle. So everybody had a negative impact that cubicles are bad and everything like that. But look at now, like things are much more good, right? So the fact that Corona has brought is that Corona has basically calibrated the technical implementation, which was actually required much before.
I think like you said, the status-driven society, apart from that, I think it's also there because lack of knowledge is there regarding technology, right? So, for example, if I know that this might benefit me, so, for example, there's this misconception which travels around that the AI will take jobs, AI will kill jobs, they'll make the human capital obsolete. However, one has to realize that actually they'll not make it obsolete, because once they're coming in, even though they'll be taking some jobs, they'll be creating many others. So apparently, humans have to upskill. You could not just sit comfortably at one position and then imagine that nobody else will be taking your place. So I think there's this misconception, there's this fear regarding the whole of technology, and that's why the whole presence of, not adopting technology is there.
Conclusion being, all these physical conferences se taaj ka benefit ho raha hai. But having talked about a lot of technical things now, as non-technical students, this brings me to a very important question. That as non-technical students, when both of us were working on our own idea, a major problem we faced was ki hamari liye coding kaun karega, ya how will the product development take place? Because we had no clue about programming or, you know, coding, etc., etc., which is, I think, a problem faced by most of the non-technical students when they're starting up. But, you know, as technical students, I think the technical part was sorted for you guys, probably the coding and programming part.
Mm-hmm.
But what sort of problems did you guys face?
The problem is just that identification is the biggest thing. It's not actually what I can create and what I cannot, but it's actually, do the people even need it? For example, if I create a very hi-fi knife, okay, which has an AI inbuilt feature, it can detect apple and pears, and like if you just keep it, it will slice it down and all that stuff. Nobody needs it. A simple iron knife works, and that's why it's just working till the date. Okay, so people are not needing technology at each and every point. There are specific points where they are needing it, right? So identifying what the people need, which I think Y Combinator, which is a startup accelerator, which any person should see if they are looking to starting up. So I think that is a channel which you can actually just read it as a Bible, and like just whatever they are saying, just keep in the head. Don't argue at the time, because afterwards you'll understand what they're saying. So even I understood this point after hard pains. Like, nobody's interested how good you are a scientist if you're not bringing value, or how good you're an engineer, or how good you're a lawyer, or whatever you are, if you're not bringing in value. That's it. And if we are living in a capitalist society, by not bringing value, nobody's going to give you capital. That's it. And that goes with the example of AI taking away jobs. Like, if I become, let's suppose, a horse rider today, nobody will give me money, right, for whatever I'm doing. I can do it for a hobby. But if I say that the society has become bad and we are bad people nowadays, that's not the case. AI aa jayega to aur job ban jayengi. Hafte mein kya kehte hain, 7 din 5 6 din ki jagah 2 din kaam karke bhi kya utna paisa nahi mil sakta hai kya? You can just work. Apna kaam kam khoda ho sakta hai, right? That is also the case. पैसा थोड़ी ना कहीं जा रहा है, एआई को पैसा थोड़ी ना लग रहा है. सो दैट इज द मेन आइडिया बिहाइंड इट.
सो यू टॉक्ड अबाउट आइडेंटिफाइंग द राइट मार्केट, एंड आई वांट टू आस्क हाउ मच हैज दैट वर्कड आउट फॉर यू. फॉर एग्जांपल, यू शिफ्टेड फ्रॉम एआर टू वीआर टू द गेमिंग इंडस्ट्री. सो आई थिंक दैट्स समथिंग व्हिच यू आइडेंटिफाइड. सो डेल्विंग इनटू इट अ बिट फर्दर, लाइक कलाम लैब्स इज अबाउट टीचिंग स्टूडेंट्स राइट थ्रू गेम्स. So how did you find the mindset of the parents to be, and how difficult was it to penetrate through those mindsets? Because a lot of Indian parents have the mindset which is a bit primitive, I would say. For example, ratta marna hai, teachers ki classes attend karni hai, paper mein number lana hi hai, agar wo sab nahi karte ho then you're not a bright child, which I don't think is the case. So how tough was the identification for you and the penetration for you?
So we were working in the education domain since the beginning, right? We worked with NCERT and other government bodies to develop things and projects. What we identified was that, not saying that the organizations are not working well, they are working really hard to deliver something good in the country. All the government organizations, they are really working hard. But the problem which is missing is that they are not exactly looking, not all of them are looking from the child's perspective. And that is happening even in all the edtech companies which are there. Can't, like in an education industry, it's one of the industry where you have two stakeholders. If I am a Spotify and I want to give you service for songs, right? There's nothing between you and me. If you want to have Spotify, then you will definitely give money to this cost. Like you will give special charges and that will give better service, right? But in education, there's parent and kid involved. Now, parents are basically overburdened by so many advertisement and commercials from N number of coachings with N number of dreams that now they are not deciding. Okay, like that is something which has crept in well. Like there are so many edtech companies, ye le lo, ye kara lo, Einstein bana lo, Elon Musk bana lo, which is actually working so hard on them that they are confused. And the only thing which is happening nowadays, which we are seeing, is that if the kid agrees to join something, they'll definitely agree. And that is because of the exposure. Because parents understand, even in the higher age group, or if you're in class 10th or 11th, high school, middle school onwards, parents do know that the kid is more aware of the world than what they were during the, what they are even today. Okay. They know better opportunities, better things than that. And that is something which is slightly coming in due to the YouTube and the Google and the whole of the internet thing. And that is why our approach is more kid-centric. We do not parshan the parents. We do not call them for sales and all that much. Okay. We just stick to the kids. If they are liking it, they'll tell their parents that Kalam Lab is good. And just to emphasize on that, it's not just a game which we are creating. We are bringing a virtual dream for a kid. So I told you immersive technology. So what Kalam Labs as Genesis is that there's a character which has no limits, Jigyasu, which is the character of the game world, gaming world, or you can say virtual world. It can fly a spaceship, do experiments on Earth, go to Mars, go to black holes on their own spaceships, solve questions and do everything just on their mobile phone. That's it. So it's a dreamy virtual land for kids who are interested in space and sci-fi. And kids are always interested in science and sci-fi things.
It seems very interesting. How can the two of us also enroll in Kalam Labs?
You actually have to do time travel for that, and if you want to understand time travel, you can definitely come to Kalam Labs YouTube sessions.
What I see is that, you know, when you go to the Kalam Labs website, there are a lot of accomplished mentors which you guys have on board. You also have a lot of advisors. So how was that process? How did you bring so many prolific people and great minds together?
The process is actually quite simple one. My co-founders Faraz and Shashak, they are my best friends since college as well. So we have done all the kind of activities which you could imagine being boy, like being a boy at engineering college, right? So we were also going for food parades. We were also participating in carnivals. We were doing n number of things. So we have been doing such kind of things, right? So in that only, we actually became quite patient, to be honest. Okay. So if there's any chief guest into the institute, so without any idea, I still remember the first time when we pitched the startup to Prashant Palakuti, sir, who actually came to bits and donated around 7 crore rupees for the whole alumni funding. So he was a star man of the whole show. Like he was donating such a huge amount, and there were a lot of alumni who were coming there. He was a star man of the whole thing which was happening at bits. So we had one thing in common: if such kind of a person is in the room, then we'll definitely talk to him. That's it. Or talk to her. That's it. So we always used to pursue people shamelessly and just talk to them. We were sometimes thrashed away, but that was actually helpful. And however counterintuitive it is, humans are by nature a bit helpful. Nobody will slap you if you just say that I want to tell you about my startup idea. So that is something which we need to understand, that what is the worst circumstances. The worst circumstances that they'll say that they'll not talk. And that happens. That's totally happened. They have their own rights to not to talk to you, but mostly they help out well. So with that, with zero connections, now like after 2-3 years of journey, we have made so many connections without any help of our members of the family, or like there has been support from the family, but our own raw connections were so good that even at the minister's level, at the chief minister or whatever you can think, there are people who are aware of our work. I'm not saying that it's good to be known by all these people, but it tells that to what level you are trying to push forward. So that is something which was best. We were always Besharam if there's a chief guest. We actually met the Microsoft CTO, Shroni Srivastava ma'am, with that only. And that incident is actually quite hopeful one, because that was an event which happened at Taj, okay? So Taj Bangalore, and it was definitely a good event. With a lot of pomp and things, there were so many people from different countries, and we were also suited up and presenting things at our stall, right? So at that point of time, Rohini ma'am came in, and she was a CTO, that's fine. So we were just listening to her speech, and she was talking about virtual reality and mixed reality. And if you look what you're working on in the audience, and somebody's telling something similar on the stage, that gives you a good kick to actually talk to that person. So we pursued her a lot the day one. We did not meet her. The day two was also quite tough. We tried to talk to her, but there were so many people who were clamoring. Finally, at the end, when she was going back with her car, we just managed to get hold of the door and just show, and Faraz actually showed the AR simulation on the book. That's it. So I just held the door, and just Faraz showed the thing directly. She liked it well, and even today she supports us, and we continuously, regularly, ideate and get feedback from her on her products and things which are doing. And that's not just the one case. We have n number of stories like this. People are quite helpful at a basic level.
Right. I think we have also been trying to get into the industry, and we have realized one thing that, see, we both come from a law background, right? And we have been trying to get into the startup ecosystem, we have been trying to talk to people. So that's also one thing which we have realized along the way, that even if you approach a lot of people, there's no worst aspect of it. And again, like you said, no one will slap you at the end of the day, and even if they're just a slap. And also that's a similar thing which we've realized, that people are helpful. Now talking about this in particular, talking about this and speaking of Kalam Labs, I'm again and again reminded by my childhood dreams regarding, childhood fascination regarding outer space, and maybe also Elon Musk and his tweets. So what is your take on aliens? What is your take on extraterrestrial life? And what is your take on maybe life on Mars?
Science is something that I can talk for hours and hours, that's for sure. So I'll tell you one thing which is pretty common in all the sciences by definition. Okay, so there is one thing called mathematics that's absolute. Okay, nobody, at least now, cannot differ that 1 + 1 = 2 or 1 + 1 = 3. Okay, we are all sure, maybe you are a person who's living in America or Cambodia or India or Russia or even Antarctica. 1 + 1 = 2 for every person, right? Now, that is something which has been achieved after lots of effort in history, okay? Since 1500, 1600 after Renaissance or the other industrial evolution. Industrial evolution is also a part of it. It's just a outspill of mathematics, which has just started coming in after the whole inception of Newton's ideas, right? So if you just look at this thing, mathematics is just a very beautiful piece of pattern which has so many things. Many of them you can prove it, but there are statements in mathematics which don't have any proof, right? And that exerts to astrobiology and other things. If I go by the numbers, we have billions of stars in the same Milky Way galaxy. We have billions of galaxies, and all the stars can potentially have at least one planet. So now, how probable do you think that at least in any one of them we might find a life species? It is so probable mathematically. It's 100% probability according to mathematics. Mathematically, कि कहाँ कहीं ना कहीं पे तो किसी ना किसी को तो ऐसी सिचुएशन मिल जाएगी कि वहाँ लाइफ निकल जाए. Now the problem comes is we as a humans are very small to this large amusement park in which we are just living in our island of Earth, right? We have just went on to moon in person. We have seen the things beyond Kuiper Belt of Pluto, if you call. Through our own camera, New Horizons and Voyager 1 and 2. And we have a Hubble Space Telescope, which can look back through time. okay, look back through millions of years away, millions of years ago, what happened over there? Because light travels at a speed, right? So what you're looking at the stars, they are probably billions of years old, right? They're not, there's no proof that they can be existing right now as well. So the point here comes is that as humans, we are very limited to find out this answer so easily. So I totally think that it can take up time, more than even 100 or 200 years, until unless we get a proof that aliens do exist. But till that time, we should always do not stop searching. We should always search for these things, because it's something at our end. It's our responsibility to find them, right? Because we are the explorers and the conquerors of science, right? So it's our responsibility to find out. And luckily, there are bodies like ISRO and NASA who are well enough equipped to solve these questions.
Exactly. So now, you know, your interest in space is pretty evident. You gave a lot of insights. I didn't know of all of these things. I know of space at a superficial level, but this is something which is very insightful. But if, you know, if a very kiddish kind of a question to you, if aliens actually existed and they come to Earth, which technology do you think they would be most interested in?
They might not be interested in anything on Earth, because I'll tell you why. We are a level 2 civilization. Okay, we have not even crossed our solar system yet. And if an alien species, which I'm for sure, if they are intelligent enough, then they will not be present. Like, if there's a species which is intelligent more than the human species, then there are good chances they are not present in the solar system, because we have looked well in the solar system. It's still, there are many parts which are not seen. But we know that Neptune mein to koi space camp nahi chala raha hai, theek hai? Kyunki wahan jagah hi nahi hai. Matlab, after Mars, you cannot find a planet jahan pe aap khade bhi ho pao. Okay, so there are all storms and stand storms which are going in Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune and Uranus. So wahan koi khade hone ki bhi jagah nahi hai. To wahan pe koi bacteria shayad hawa mein ud raha hoga, then it's good. Ye ho sakta hai possible. But haan, aisa to nahi. Aur Venus mein to pakka koi rehta nahi, warna ab tak ka to mil chuke hote. That's it. Now, giving that as a proof, if an alien species coming to solar system, now for an alien species perspective, unko sirf sun dikhai de raha hoga, unko kuch farak nahi padta ki kya kehte hain, kya hai earth ke around and all these things, right? So if they are looking at a sun, to star bahut zyada special hona chahiye. Usme bhi we are not that special. Sun is a pretty ordinary, more than ordinary star if you can look in our solar system, or in the, not in solar system, in the whole galactic universe, right? It's a pretty damn like common star which you can find anywhere. Okay, just punch your bag like here and there, and like hundreds and hundreds of sun you could be seen in the area, right? In just line of your sight, right? So with all being said, if an alien species which can travel with the speed of light, it can cover all these distances, and they're coming to Earth, they might just fly by and say yahan to kuch hai nahi, chale jaate hain wapas. Because definitely if you look at the pace that Earth is developing, it's more than impossible to cover all of these things. We will not be able to explore any star which is not present in the whole Milky Way galaxy, no matter how far we advance we become in the next 100 or 200 years. So universe for us is very confined, but the best part is, which is a line from the Crick Gazard, which is also a science community, they actually gave it well, that if you look at the time spectrum, we are just placed well enough to look at the past clearly and predict the future also clearly. That's it. So if you want to talk about what's good in these times, it's actually that we can say, we actually know that the Big Bang has happened. Do you know the proofs of the Big Bang will disappear after 1 or 2 billion years away? Okay, like there will be only one galaxy which could be seen in all the observable universe, and that will be our own galaxy. That's it. So unko jo bhi stars dikh rahe honge kisi aur galaxy ke honge nahi, and they will never have any idea that something more than just a galaxy was existing in this universe. And I'm talking about billions of galaxies which are existing right now and we know about them.
Having said that, do you think it is safe to say that even if aliens exist, we are not threatened by them at all? Because like you said, if they do exist, if they do find us, they're definitely more evolved. And if they're more evolved, then they don't want to do anything with Earth.
For a corollary, like if I want to tell you that if, let's suppose an alien species comes to Earth for no reason at all, wo aa gaye kisi wormhole ki problem ki wajah se, and we are now having a conference, right? And they want to do what is Earth, right? So the only thing interested, like in the end, what you need is actually nutrients to grow and to feed, right? That's it. Our old requirement is for food and resources. That has been the case since all the history. Now, if you look at this thing, when before the exploration of America, America was only a land of Mayas and Incas. And North America and South America was most, one of the most flourished lands you could ever see in history. There were billions and millions of people who were living in these civilizations, even more than the total population of Europe at that point of time, 1300s and 1400s. So when Mayas and Incas saw Spanish and Vikings even, or the other part people from other parts of the world coming to their island, they were not hostile because they had abundant of resources, right? So they became friends with them. And Europeans, on the other hand, like, because they were scarce, they were living in a time when there was so many scarcity of resources, they actually exploited all the resources out of them and then got back to Europe, built castles and everything out. So there's always been a disturbance of resource, which is the problem. All the battles and all the everything which you could see in history, they only fought for resources. So if an alien species finds out that there's something which they need from us as a nutrient or a resource, and they do not have it, and that's something which is scarce enough to actually make them hostile to us, then it's going to be a war. And if that's a war, then there are good chances that we lose, because as of now, we are just an evolution to civilization. That's it. So we have to be, you have to be special even to have a like enemy good enough, right? So you do not fight with just anyone in the street. Your enemies should also be of good stature.
Unless they're the status-driven society.
That can be weird because humans are also weird, so aliens can be much weirder.
Yeah. This was a very interesting conversation. I think a lot of insights, lot of we discussed a lot of bizarre things, out-of-the-world things, to be very literal. But moving ahead with the course of podcast, now I think it is the time for a very exciting part of the podcast, the Never Too Quick Round. So just like you guys raise funds, we raise questions, and answers for these questions can never be quick enough. All right. So we'll start with the round. All right, Harshit. Our first question coming up is, if a zombie apocalypse was happening, what would be your first step?
To actually go to ISS and see the Earth. That's something which I really want to do. That's actually realistic as well.
Okay. Your one reason for becoming an entrepreneur?
The capitalist society needs more entrepreneurs to build, like, make value for capital, which is flowing all the world. We have lost value, and there's a lot of money which is not getting used.
If you're given an option to live on another planet for the rest of your life with enough oxygen and food supply, which planet would that be?
Europa. Moon of Jupiter, filled off totally. It's an ocean land, that's it.
And why so?
It's cool because I could see Jupiter so big in my sky. I can see sun. I can see other satellites floating in the sky. That's a good planet to live in.
What, according to you, is the future? Artificial intelligence or virtual reality?
None of them. The future will be much more high internet. Internet is the only limitation, the acting factor. The faster the internet, the better the world.
First thing which comes to your mind when I say, so since you're from BITS, IITs.
Fun place to study.
Why Combinator?
A good source of knowledge for entrepreneurs in a time when there is a lot of bullshit happening all over the place.
Indian education system.
Really, seriously need to work upon, like, we need to work on this thing. It's highly inefficient.
Okay. What are you, a morning person or a night person?
Night person.
What's one thing which you're excited about which is coming up?
Cryptocurrency, the blockchain and cryptocurrency. That's something which is very weird. That can change things very fast.
Got it. What's the one thing you would like to change about yourself?
To reduce more sleep, I guess. If I could sleep for 3 hours and be active for the whole day, then I'll be more than happy.
I think I have a similar mindset. Yeah. The next question is, if there's one scientist you would like to meet, living or dead, who would it be?
Leonardo da Vinci. He's not actually one scientist, he's a polymath. So if I meet him, I can meet all of the other things just in one person. Like,
great. Yeah. If the name Kalam Labs was not available, what else would you have named it?
Maybe some common searched English word which is yet not under SEO.
not very selective regarding your own startup name, but okay.
I am selective about Kalam Labs, that's it. If I have to name anything else apart from it, then it will be just based upon trends, right? Like SEO and other things.
Understood. So this is one question which we ask to everyone coming on the podcast. What changes do you suggest in the Indian institutions to foster the culture of entrepreneurship amongst students?
Zero attendance, I think. That's what BITS did, and they are excelling well, and it's simple as well. So I think that is something they can at least do. All other changes are like dreamy. This is something which they can do actually, because some institutions are doing it.
Yeah. And that question marks the end of another quick round. So lastly, Harshit, what advice would you like to give to budding entrepreneurs?
Search for the problem and then put forward the solution. Don't create something and then start looking that kahan isko laga do jaake. That's not the approach. Even if you succeed, that will be a short-term success, because things change very rapidly. We are living in a very rapid time, and it's actually very good. The future of Indian economy is boosting, and it will rise more than exponentially, like what people are predicting, if we do not do something really bad.
Right. I think this marks the end of this wonderful episode. Thank you so much, Harshit, for doing this and for being a part of this.
Thanks a lot, sir, again, Adrian.
Yep, that's our college bell. Need to head back to classes. But these stories and conversations won't stop. See you soon with the next episode of Never Too Young. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.